you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
JonBenet was just the cutest little bug I've ever seen. You just fall in love with her. And my daughter was with me and she said the same thing. Who is that little blonde girl? And I told her her name and she went over and talked to her and they became friends. So that was how it all started.
Welcome to episode 9 of The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects. I'm your host, Danielle Robay. Now we're turning our attention to perhaps the most well-known and notorious aspect of the whole JonBenet mystery, her participation in child beauty pageants. Did those pageants put her at risk from potential abusers? And is her murderer to be found in that community? I should warn you that this episode does contain details that some may find especially upsetting.
My name is JonBenet Ramsey, and I'm 5 and a half.
Okay, what is your favorite animal at the zoo?
The monkeys, because they laugh and stuff and hang around.
What you have just heard is JonBenet being interviewed at America's Royal Miss Pageant in the summer of 1996, just one of several child beauty contests at which she won titles. As Colorado-based investigative journalist Paula Woodward explains, for the Ramsey family, pageants were a central part of their everyday lives.
Her mother and her aunt had been in beauty pageants, and JonBenet found out about beauty pageants and she wanted to be in them. It was something that the family discussed and they decided to do it. And once she started entering them, then it really caught on. It was a very big deal in that family that she was involved in the beauty pageants.
Here's JonBenet's father, John Ramsey.
We thought the pageants were something JonBenet and Patsy had fun with. They didn't take it too seriously, but JonBenet was very extroverted, very outgoing, and she had fun with it. I thought the people attending were just grandparents and parents, and apparently that wasn't the case, but we were naive.
At the time that JonBenet was entering pageants, there were more than 500 such contests a year in America, specifically catering to preteen and child contestants. In the course of her short life, as well as being crowned America's Royal Miss, JonBenet won the titles of Little Miss Charlevoix, Little Miss Colorado, Colorado State All-Star Kids Cover Girl, and National Tiny Miss Beauty. Many competitions would require her to sing or dance for the audience, as well as model a range of different outfits, most of which were made especially for her by Pamela Griffin, a friend of Patsy Ramsey's.
Everything that you see on TV, her I Want to Be a Cowboy Sweetheart, little pink cowboy dress, lots of petticoats, and I made that for her. Usually if it was real extravagant and fancy, I made it.
But for those outside the pageant world, the idea of little girls dressing up and performing for a crowd of adults could be problematic.
Sometimes pageants have a theme, and this particular theme was anything from the 1920s, I think, or 30s. And Patsy and her sisters made JonBenet this enormous cape with rhinestones and stuff like that. And she was supposed to be a Ziegfeld girl, and that got so much criticism. They said because Patsy was trying to make her look like a stripper, that just wasn't any further from the truth. I mean, it was just her idea of what a Ziegfeld girl would look like. But no matter what we did, everything we did wanted every pageant and everybody loved it until the baby got killed. Then they hated everything.
As we heard in a previous episode, the Ramseys' participation in the child beauty pageant scene had attracted the attention of investigators before. Most notably, when JonBenet's photographer, Randy Simons, seemed to have a mental breakdown. Steven Singular, author of Presumed Guilty, an investigation into the JonBenet Ramsey case, explains.
All of the beauty pageant mothers that we spoke with said exactly the same thing to us, that since the murder, Randy had been calling them up in the middle of the night, after midnight, hysterical, screaming and crying, saying, "I did not kill JonBenet. I did not kill JonBenet."
Simons is currently incarcerated on child pornography charges. And as we have already established, his DNA does not match the DNA found at the crime scene. But as Singular and his partner and co-author Joyce discovered, the pageant scene he was a photographer for could, for some, be a gateway to, or even a part of, a horrific, hidden pedophile's playground. They describe how they stumbled upon this secret world after JonBenet's death.
We live in Denver, which is about 30 miles from Boulder, and I was paying some attention to it. There were so many journalists covering it from coast to coast that I didn't know if there would be any opportunity to actually do anything. But Joyce was following it more closely, and she started to talk to me about getting involved.
I started watching the news all the time, and of course, I just kept seeing the images then of JonBenet, mostly in beauty pageant garb, and they had it in a continual loop. It was constantly on. So they were going to have a press conference in Boulder, and I told Steve, I think we should look into this case, even though there were numerous other journalists on it. I just said, let's just take a chance and go up there and see what we could find out.
Right. And not much happened at the press conference, but we were taken aside by a reporter for Channel 7 here in Denver, the television station. And she invited us to come to her station the next night or the night after that and to observe something. And she was quite excited about it. And so we went with her. And we were taken into a back room where there was a hacker. The internet for public consumption was about 2 or 3 years old. It was very, very new. And we watched as the hacker sort of worked his way around the internet into what today would be called the dark web. At that time it wasn't, but he was able to access very graphic, essentially child porn sites. And we witnessed things that we had no idea were on the internet, having to do with children and molestation and being tied up and things like this.
What they saw next had shocking links to the murder of JonBenet.
I love solving puzzles. That's what true crime is to me, after all, just one big puzzle. When I want to take a break from the dark stuff, though, I like to lighten up my puzzle time with Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a puzzle game where every level feels like uncovering a new layer in a story, one you get to take part in. I love that the game is challenging while not being frustrating. The best part for me is when I have to choose the fiends I want on my team for each level. I have to make sure I'm playing the best fiends possible based on their skill sets, and since every level is different, it requires me to choose wisely for every challenge. The more I play, the more fun it gets. Plus, you don't need the internet to play, so anytime I want a little entertainment, Best Fiends is my go-to. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play online. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So for those who can recall the crime scene with JonBenet, she had a garrote around her neck. She had it tied around her wrist. And what we were seeing on the internet was very evocative of what the crime scene actually looked like. It was actually the closest thing to anything that I had seen anyway in regards to the crime scene. So we were shocked. We were kind of stunned that people were doing this online. They were trading pictures. They were asking for pictures of JonBenet, dead or alive. And there was this whole feeding frenzy around it. So as people who write about true crime, what we suddenly realized was this is an entirely new criminal realm. Child pornography is very hard to move through the U.S. mail, but suddenly you had a worldwide web where people all over the world could trade these images or sell them or do whatever they wanted.
I remember when that person typed in, "Does anyone have any pictures of JonBenet?" It was like this immediately, this shark feeding at the reef. You know, they just came in fast and furious. And we were shocked beyond belief. We had no idea this kind of thing was going on.
Yeah, and law enforcement had no idea at that point. You know, they've caught up somewhat. But this was the Wild West. I mean, this was just crazy. And people were doing this to their own kids.
But what was the connection to JonBenet's participation in beauty pageants?
Once we saw these images, once we realized that all of this activity was going on, and it was going on around girls who were 5, 6, 7 years old, the same age as JonBenet, that's what we began to look into.
So we've always wondered if there were pictures out there in the dark web or somewhere that somebody had JonBenet. So we began to probe into the world of child beauty pageants, and we went to Boulder and the surrounding environs and began asking mothers who were in the same beauty pageants as JonBenet if something that was out of order or something unusual. And they began telling us there were certain photographers would many times not want to leave their children alone. So what we began discovering was that there's a whole world surrounding the beauty pageant circuit. And you don't know who you're inadvertently stimulating by dressing up your child and putting them in these pageants. You could be attracting pedophiles maybe that were in the sponsors of the pageants or judging the pageants or people in the spectator sections of the pageants.
We, through our interviews with people over many years, had heard about various parties that occurred in Boulder involving children, various activities, illegal activities over the years involving children, multiple victims. There are a couple of cases. We encountered numerous reports of things of this nature. We're not saying they tie in directly to the JonBenet case, but we're saying that they were going on around her. Just like we're saying that the beauty pageants attacked some suspect individuals who were moving around her to the point that they even had to get rid of certain people.
Lou Smith had his list of top suspects, many of them living outside the Boulder area. But there was one name that Lou focused on more than others. This is Jameson and Doug Longini talking about John Eustace.
Jameson, it's Doug Longini. I'm calling because one of the names on Lou Smith's list of suspects or people that he was interested in is John Brewer Eustace. What is John Brewer Eustace's background? What can you tell me?
Well, he first came to my attention around Easter of 1997. A situation came up here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where a two-year-old little girl was taken from her bedroom. She was held for 3 days. She was raped. She was not murdered. She was then left in somebody's backyard to be found.
A two-year-old,
almost three. He went into this child's bedroom. I don't believe the child even had a crib or a bed. I believe she was sleeping on a mat on the floor. There were adults in the next room. She had a four-year-old sibling in the room with her. This man took the child, changed her diaper, told the older child to shh. She's my child now. Don't tell anybody, but she's my child, and left out the window. He acknowledged the fact that he's a serial rapist. He claimed he was molested as a young child. As a teenager, he grew to understand that when a girl says no or stop, that she's really saying, this is really what I want. Turned into a serial rapist. At first, it was anything that was available. And then he started focusing in on younger children. And it ended when he was arrested after his assault on two-year-old Elizabeth Bradshaw.
The similarities with the killing or attempted kidnapping of JonBenet are striking. But things became even more disturbing. I should warn you, some of the following details may be upsetting to listeners.
It wasn't long after that that Detectives Steve Thomas and Ron Gossage went to Charlotte to meet with him. And there's a few paragraphs in Steve Thomas's book on coming to Charlotte to see him.
So tell me, what did he write?
This is Jameson reading excerpts from Steve Thomas's book, JonBenet.
The worst of the bunch and the most likely suspect we came across, other than the Ramseys, was John Brewer Eustace III in custody in Charlotte, North Carolina for kidnapping a two-year-old girl. Police found the name of JonBenet Ramsey atop a bizarre list of pedophiles' favorite sexual fantasies, and he kept a scrapbook filled with photographs of JonBenet alongside a Barbie doll on a makeshift altar. Gossage, with a baby at home, could barely contain his disgust as Eustace recounted, hypothetically of course, how he would molest little girls and the importance of wiping fingerprints from bodies. In the North Carolina incidents, he confessed to entering the apartment through a garden-level window while an adult was awake in the living room, shushing the little blonde child and taking her away through a window, leaving behind a flashlight. He later tied her, put tape over her mouth, and wrapped electrical cord around her head to control her. The similarities to our case convinced us that we had to investigate this suspect upside down. He smoked three packs of Marlboros while recounting dozens of molestations, watching our reactions through half-closed eyes, carefully avoiding dates or places, but he feigned forgetfulness when we tried to account for his whereabouts on December 25th. When we sought samples of pubic hair, he shrugged that he couldn't provide any because he shaved his crotch so as not to leave telltale DNA evidence. But in a fourth floor detective bureau bathroom, Eustace pinched folds of pubic skin and we plucked stubs of hair with tweezers. Finally, we returned him to his county jail cell. Back in the hotel, I stood beneath a steaming shower, scrubbing hard with soap to rid myself of the stench of John Eustace. We found that he had a temporary job with a film processing lab during Christmas week, and a computer-generated timesheet showed that he was at work on December 26th. Co-workers remembered that he had tried to kiss an unwilling woman employee that night. It was impossible to be in North Carolina and Colorado at the same time. We cleared Eustace, but hoped the Charlotte cops would put him away for a couple of forevers. And that's the end of what came in the book. Now, I want to point out a couple of things. When they hire somebody at a temporary job at a film processing lab, you're dealing with the Christmas rush. You're not worried about the 21st and 22nd because it's not when you're really busy. He may well have started work on December 26th. And his shift started at midnight. So in order to be in Charlotte at midnight and that's December 26th, you could have been anywhere in this country at midnight on December 25th. So I personally didn't think the alibi was great.
Investigators interviewed Eustace in 1997. But after obtaining DNA from his hair and a handwriting sample, discounted him as a suspect. Jameson isn't so ready to let Eustace go.
So then for John Brewer Eustace, is it checked that DNA has been done?
No, and this was early enough in the investigation that they were talking between the DA's office and the Boulder Police Department. So if indeed he had all that DNA tested, I believe that Lou Smith would have seen the reports and would have entered it into his spreadsheet.
I know you said that John Brewer Eustace is in prison in North Carolina, but he's not checked off of Lou Smith's list of suspects. So you did some work on him. Not easy work. I know that it was difficult. What were your first steps?
Okay. Being encouraged by Montero, he thought it would be a good idea for me to write to Eustace. I did initiate some writing, and he was quite happy to get my letter. He saw it as a sign from God. He had asked God to have women approach him and write to him so that he could build this group of people for regeneration. It gets into this whole religious thing that I can't explain to you. He said whether or not I got to visit him was a completely different matter, but that through letters, I could learn something. And so I did. I started writing letters to him. And the first letter I wrote to him was 15 sentences, and his response to me was 24 pages. His letters to me are long. I was glad to see they weren't typewritten. He wrote, after 22 and a half years in prison, I asked Alpha God to start having women write me so I can start getting some of God's legitimate chosen names for positioning in the startup of the regeneration. He wanted to save me. But then he wrote, you have just renewed and skyrocketed my interest in JonBenet Ramsey, and you have made yourself very interesting in my eyes as well, though in a very positive way for the coming regeneration. Do not be surprised if your goals behind writing me change or at least increase largely.
Lou Smith was also interested in the mind of a person who would do something terrible to a child. Right. Yeah, so did you get some insight? Did he provide some insight into that?
He said his life was drugs, alcohol, religion, and rape. He didn't care what age. He accepted his urges were put there by the Alpha God, and so they were all okay. And he was raping females, a serial rapist. Over time, that changed into an interest in younger girls, focused on virgins, somewhat younger girls. And he asked this question, and I'm going to quote it, in one of his letters, Did Alpha God put the hymen over the vagina as the veil over the holiest place in the tabernacle? His letters were full of things like that. Very difficult to read, but this is the mind of that kind of monster. I can't read the rest of what I even had written down. I can't. I don't want to do that. But this is a man who still thinks pedophiles are a gift to our children and should not be punished.
For a while now, John Brewer Eustace has been on Lou Smith's list of potential suspects. You've looked into him, corresponded with him. Do you think he should be off the list?
No. He was put in jail in 1997. Anybody who was put in jail before the year 2000 in North Carolina, their DNA did not automatically get put into any system, regardless of what the crime was. That they could offer it, or they could just say, no, thank you, I don't want to participate. He didn't choose to participate, so his DNA is not in CODIS.
Well, and then when you asked him, he definitely rejected that idea of giving up his DNA.
Oh, yeah. He didn't say he thinks his DNA is in CODIS. He's unaware of it, and he does not want it in there. He absolutely would not put me on his visitor list, and he got angry at me that I would suggest that he put himself in a situation where he asked for DNA. And when the handwriting, this is something that I felt was very important. I have hundreds of pages of his writing. For our purposes, he's admitted to being a serial rapist. Based on that, I think his DNA should be put in. But I would be really surprised if it came back a match for JonBenet, partly because his handwriting doesn't match, partly because I believe at the time he didn't have the money to travel.
As civilians, we've taken our investigation into Eustace's potential involvement in the death of JonBenet as far as we can. Although not completely cleared, it seems very unlikely that he had the means to travel to Colorado and back within the hours he was unaccounted for, which means it's time for our investigators to move on to another name on Lou Smith's list. Next time, on the killing of JonBenet, the final suspects.
His girlfriend had turned him in as a suspect because she was suspicious about his whereabouts that night. He was gone all night and came in very late and took a shower and just acting very strange. His handwriting comparison is pretty convincing.
I said, that's the guy. Let's dig deeper.
The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, is hosted by me, Danielle Robay. Executive produced by Dylan Howard and Matt Sprouse, and is a production of Broad and Water Studios and Endeavor Audio. Executive producers also include Tom Freestone, Doug Longini, Susan Bennett, James Robertson, and Andy Tillett. The series is written by Dominic Utten, reporting by Doug Montero. The series is mixed and engineered by Sean Kravitz and Sam Ada. There is so much more to this story, and you don't want to miss anything, I can assure you. Subscribe to The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, wherever you get podcasts. If you have information that could help our investigators and the Ramseys identify JonBenet's killer, please email us at tips@justiceforjonbenet.com.